It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, it's Food Friday. We'll get you ready for summer potlucks. We'll get recipes for when we need that dish to pass. First, summer is a great time to tackle your reading list or sit down, relax, and enjoy a fun beach read. Our next guest has a lot of suggestions, and maybe you do too. Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are you reading this summer? Do you like to take on challenging books in the summer season, or do you like a lighter read? Or maybe you need a recommendation. Let us know what you like. We'll see if we can help. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Joanne Berg is the founder and owner of Mystery to Me in Madison. That's a bookstore that has a specific name but sells all kinds of books. Joanne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you.
Now, do you have a different kind of book you like to read in the summer, or is it kind of the same for you all year long?
Well, as a bookseller, I'm always reading books that come out like all different times. Like I'm reading one now that comes out in October. But if I had my druthers, I'd probably read lighter books in the summertime and heavier books in the wintertime where I just want to curl up by the fire and take some time.
And do you find, since you sell books to a lot of people, do you find a lot of people trend in that direction? They come in starting in, I don't know, June, July and say, yeah, nothing heavy, please.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah.
And, you know, how I imagine people ask you all the time, hey, what should I read? How do you triage them? How do you figure out, you know, what that particular person might want to read?
Well, it's the favorite part of being a bookseller is having somebody ask us, you know, to find them a good book. We usually ask them what the last book that they read that they really enjoyed. Sometimes they can't remember the title, but they can remember the storyline.
Or that blue book, right? The blue cover?
Exactly.
You get that a lot.
And we just keep asking questions till we get a little more information about what they would like. A lot of times this time of year, we'll get questions about, I'm traveling to Italy and I'd like to have a good mystery book that, you know, takes place in Sicily. Ooh. Or I'm traveling to Germany and do you have anything that takes place in Germany? And so it's been fun to find books, you know, and we're small, but we special order them and get the right books in for people.
All right. You sent us a list of books that you're recommending these days. Let's start naming names. We've got a lot of these are new to me. Some are Wisconsin authors I know pretty well. Let's start with this one. A dictionary. This sounds intriguing to me. Dictionary of Lost Words by Pip Williams. I gather this is just out in paperback.
Right. Just a really nice story for the summer. It's about a young girl who is growing up in Oxford, England, and her mother has passed away, and she has to go to work with her father every day, and he is one of the editors of the very first Oxford English Dictionary. So he's sitting at this tall table, desk, and she sits underneath and she's reading books and she's just, you know, being a young girl waiting for her dad to be done with work. And she's realizing that they're tossing out words that they're not going to put in the Oxford English Dictionary. And she becomes fascinated by why they're not choosing these books. And one of the reasons they're not choosing these words, I mean that book's words, is because they're words used primarily by women. And so she starts collecting these and comes up with a dictionary of lost words.
That sounds like a fun one for people who are into words. Here's another one, a book called, I'm intrigued by this. I like some kinds of puzzles like cryptic crosswords and stuff. A book called Puzzle Master by Danielle Trussoni.
Yeah, Danielle used to be a bookseller here in Madison. And I think she's living out in California now. But this book is really interesting. It's about a young boy in high school who is a football player, and he's really into football, and he has a very traumatic brain injury, and he comes out of it okay physically, except he becomes a puzzle savant. He can look at anything and solve a puzzle and read something and know immediately what the answer is. And so a murder happens, and he is called on to help them solve this mystery.
Now, your the name of your bookstore is Mystery and Me. As I mentioned, it's not just a mystery bookstore. That said, right. That one involves a mystery puzzle master. Any other mysteries when people come in, go for the first word in your store title and want that mystery that they're not familiar with yet?
Well, I mean, there are a lot. So one of the things that we do is we really highly curate the mystery section. It's probably about a 30% of our store, and we will bring in mysteries that you're not going to find in an airport bookstore necessarily, or, you know, at Target or Costco. We're looking for books that are just, you know, there's those treasures that are series that may be older or maybe brand new series. And so, you know, we like to try to ask those questions that we talked about earlier and find out what they like to read and then find them something really different.
Talking to Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. We are getting ideas for great summer reads. Joanne has a lot of titles to share with us. Maybe you do too. Is there a series that you love to read in any genre that you're always looking forward to that next one to come out? Would people ask you, hey, what should I read? What kind of books do you serve up to them? Or maybe you need a recommendation your own self. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Joanne, you sent us a lot of titles with and authors with Wisconsin connections, including Mary Bergen, a familiar name, I think, to fans of Wisconsin Public Radio, and the book Small Town Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but I will sometimes, you know, wake up on a Sunday morning or a Saturday and wonder, you know, I don't really have anything planned, but I just want to do something a little bit different. And I just think this book is perfect because it has a little synopsis about like small towns, you know, less than 5,000 people in Wisconsin that you can drive to. And this book is fun because it might have a little unknown museum or, you know, a cafe, or it just tells you a little bit about what's in that area. And I love it for just, it's like a resource book that we can pull off. It's like having a hiking book of Wisconsin, and you pull off and you choose a new hike to take. This one is choose a new Wisconsin town to go experience.
And that's nonfiction. You've got a bunch of fiction by authors in Wisconsin. I just want to drop some names here, and you can tell us about them. Kathleen Ernst, historical mysteries, I gather, set in Wisconsin.
Yeah, she has two historical mystery series. And the first one is about a woman named Chloe Ellefson, who is a museum curator at Old World Wisconsin. And so the series goes through various parts of Wisconsin history as Chloe gathers information about this particular area. Like one of them is about a lace maker, Belgian lace maker. And so there's cultural interest to ethnic groups that settled in Wisconsin. Her second series is it's about a woman named Hanukkah Bauer, who's a Pomeranian Wisconsinite. And so I haven't read that series yet. I have that on my to-do list. But again, it gives a good sense of the historical ethnic backgrounds of people from Wisconsin.
Now, here's one set on a fictional island, a creepy island in Door County, Dead 11 by Giuliano Jimmy.
Yeah, one of my booksellers absolutely love this book. So there's lots of weird and creepy things, I guess, that go on this island. And the bookseller told me that the reason it's fictional is that the people who live there are trying to keep it that way.
Fantastic. We are getting some great summer reading recommendations. Joanne Berg is with us, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a book you find yourself recommending to everybody these days? What is it about that book that makes you think everybody ought to read it? What do you look forward to reading maybe on a vacation in the summer? What do you pack along on that trip? Do you need a recommendation yourself? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about summer reads with Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are you reading this summer? What recommendations do you have for others, maybe for a vacation read? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to your calls now. Julie is with us in Two Rivers. Julie, hi.
Hi. I just tuned in, so I didn't hear the whole beginning of the show, but I just finished a book that was really good, if you like historical fiction, by Nancy Turner. It's called These Is My Words, and it's historical fiction. It's set in the 1800s, and it's about a woman who's just a really strong woman. She goes through a lot of turmoil and trauma and loss in her family and overcomes all of that. And there's a love story involved, and it's just really good. And it was her first novel, and now she's written a bunch more. But at the end, she talks about writing it and how hard that was, and, gives some recommendations for others that might want to write too.
Julie, thanks a lot. Yeah, she's got a, I just looked her up online. She's got a handful of books out. Thanks for that recommendation. Joanne, historical fiction set in the United States, Wisconsin or beyond. Do you have any other recommendations?
Oh, gosh, there are a lot of them. there are several of them that not necessarily taking place in the Midwest, but there's Kristen Hanna writes about the Dust Bowl. And I'm blanking on the name of that book right now. But there's a lot of Westerns, of course. There's a book coming out. I think it's later this month. And it's about a woman who is a Native American woman based on a true story of her family growing up as a Native American, as the people were, her family were taken off to the Native American schools. You're catching me off guard here. I'm trying to think of the names of all these books.
That's okay. There's a lot out there.
There are.
Julie, thanks a lot for that call. Karen joins us in Oconomowoc. Karen, hi.
Hi. I had a book recommendation for a book that I can only read during the summertime because it makes me feel so cold reading it. It's called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich.
The Solzhenitsyn book, legendary Soviet dissident author, right, Karen? Is that one you go back and reread, it sounds like?
Sometimes. I first tried reading it in the winter, and I genuinely felt too cold.
Wow.
It has to be a summer book.
It is not a cheery, fun summer book, though, right? It's been a long time since I read it. Karen, thanks a lot for sharing that. Joanne, are there classics like that that you might go back to or you might recommend to people, whether or not it's a fun read, as that Solzhenitsyn novel, very important, not necessarily lively and fun, though?
Well, it's interesting because more and more, I would say young adults and young men are coming in, and we are looking for classics for the summer. It's because they're not in school and they don't want to read these books because they have to read them. We're selling Anna Karenina. We're selling, a lot of Jane Austen. It's just a sort of a constant, Joan Didion is another one that, we've been asked about. And then, just yesterday we sold The Remains of the Day by, Kazuo Ishiguro. I think that summer can be a time for people to, sort of catch up on some things and maybe take some time that they didn't have before.
Now, you mentioned young men there, and I got to say, I didn't read Pride and Prejudice growing up, and I thought, well, this is not for me. I'm a guy. And I finally read it a few years ago, and then I read some more Jane Austen. It's good stuff. I can't believe I didn't read it all those decades.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people feel that way. And I read some of those books in college and I was like, oh, this is such a drag. And now I read them and I love them. So, you know, I always tell people sometimes if you don't like a book the first time around, it's just not the right time for that book.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call. Annie is with us now in Milwaukee. Annie, hi.
Hi there. I read a lot. I'm lucky enough to be retired, so I read all the time. But the one book that has really stuck with me is The Light Pirate by Lily Brooks Dalton. And it's set in it's a dystopian novel about Florida becoming uninhabitable because of
Oh.
climate change. And the people, you know, there's always people who refuse to leave when there's a hurricane. And these people refuse to leave Florida. And it's set in the near future as Florida becomes uninhabitable, and it really stuck with me.
All right, Annie, I gotta
Really, highly
ask.
recommend it.
I like science fiction a lot. I don't always like dystopian stuff because it's too much of a bummer for me. How grimly depressing is this?
I don't like science fiction. I kind of overdosed on it when I was younger. I seldom read it now. And as far as grim things, yeah, I wouldn't. There's certain books I won't read because if they're too grim. But this
Okay.
one, it starts out pretty grim, but it's so fascinating, and it's really she really has her world building, I guess they would call it, how she sets the tone of what happens, and at the slow disaster, because it doesn't all happen at once, of course.
Gotcha.
So what's happening to Florida? She does a really good job, and it's just fascinating, and it's really stuck with me.
Thanks a lot for that recommendation, Annie. For a post-apocalyptic but not depressing book, I'd recommend Station 11 by Emily St.
All
John
right.
Mandel, or Mandel, I'm not sure how to say it. Joanne, run with that any direction you want. Science fiction, dystopia, not depressing or depressing enough. Take it where you will.
Well, I'm not a big dystopian kind of reader, but the one book that was on my list is Memory of Animals by Claire Fuller. Her books are always, I wouldn't say dark necessarily, but they really get into a depth of the human spirit that you don't always get to. This book, Memory of Animals, is about a young woman. She's, I think, around 27 years old, and she, hasn't had a good job experience. She's a marine biologist, and so she decides that she's going to register to be part of this experimental vaccine trial in London. And what happens is there's like everyone around is dying, and everyone has left her. The doctors, the nurses have left her, and she's left in this a sort of hospital room area with other people who signed up for the trial, but she's the only one that actually got the vaccine. So everything from her perspective about she could in fact be the only one to sort of save the world because she's been vaccinated.
Wow.
And the woman, Claire Fuller, wrote this book before the pandemic, which I find kind of creepy.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. We're talking about great summer reads with Joanne Berg with Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. Time for another caller or two. I think Dan is with us on the road. Dan, hi.
Hi, Rob. I've got several suggestions for mystery writers, two Wisconsin writers. Jeff Nania has the Northern Lakes Mystery Series. His latest one is Muskie Run. And Sue Berg, I don't know if she's related to Joanne, but she has the Driftless Mystery Series. They are all full of red herrings with surprise endings. But then I have an author I've read now. He's got two books out. The third one's coming out this summer. His name is D.A. Galloway. They are historical fiction. First one was Burning Ground, second one, Fatal Ground, and the one coming out soon is Bitter Ground. His 21-year-old contemporary protagonist from the 1970s does a time travel back to the 1870s. He's with the Hayden Expedition, which is exploring Yellowstone Park before it becomes a park.
Wow.
He meets a Crow woman. They fall in love. He goes home. He comes back the next year, and his girlfriend has a blue-eyed daughter. And it goes on from there. I just can't wait to see the third mystery, which is out, or the third novel, which will be out this summer.
Fantastic, Dan. Thanks a lot for that call. Dan dropped a couple more Wisconsin authors' names there, Joanne. And just our last minute or so, I think you have some more Wisconsin-related works on your list. Leave us with a couple more, please.
Well, Casey Osborne is, she has her debut mystery novel coming out next week called I Know What You Did. And it's my understanding it takes place in Madison, and that there's a bookstore that isn't named Mystery to Me, but may have something to do with our store. So I'm looking forward to Casey's book. And then Michelle Wilgen is a local author. She's also the co-owner of the Madison Writer Studio. She has a new book just out called Wine People and talks about the ins and outs of the wine industry.
Great. Joanne, a lot of great suggestions. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thank you.
That's Joanne Berg, founder and owner of Mystery to Me Bookstore in Madison. She joined us to share some great reading recommendations for the rest of this summer. Thanks to all your calls. Everybody else is still on the line. And you can keep, by the way, sharing books over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I see a couple of few people have already done that. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page or email ideas@wpr.org. We get enough recommendations, we could share them on the show in the future. Coming up after the news, it's Food Friday. We'll talk to a cookbook author and food show host about cooking for, you know, your casual gatherings, the best foods for potlucks and cookouts and picnics or whatever you need that dish to pass. And hoping you'll share some of your favorites along the way. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, the Milwaukee Emergency Preparedness Official tells us about heat wave preparations and how to protect yourself in dangerously hot conditions like the ones facing much of the southern United States right now. Now it's prime picnic and barbecue season here in Wisconsin. Time to bring out our favorite summer recipes to share. But cooking for a large group can be tricky, especially in the summer heat. And when somebody says they're bringing a salad to the party, well, here in Wisconsin, that can mean anything from fruits and vegetables to potatoes and pasta. Today on Food Friday, our guest shares the secret to make-ahead potluck recipes that are crowd-pleasing and easy to pull off. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What are your favorite foods to bring to a potluck? What are your favorite foods for somebody else to bring to a potluck? What is your go-to recipe when you need that dish to pass? What do you think about buying stuff at a store to bring to the potluck? Hot or not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Allie Rosen hosts a New York cooking show called Potluck. She's the author of three cookbooks, including Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. Allie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me again.
Before we get to recipes, let's talk about the planning stages here, because I think we've all been in that situation where everybody brings the dessert, or the person brought the vegetable went with potato, or the person brought the salad went with potato salad, and so on. How do we make sure we divvy up the labor so we end up with some kind of culinary variety there?
Well, I think a lot of people feel awkward telling people to do something specifically when actually most people desperately want to bring the right thing. You know, it's like we as the host want to be like, oh, I don't want to bother you. But in some ways, it's more of a bother to not be specific. So if you're having a party, it's okay to say to someone like, hey, would you bring a dessert? Hey, would you bring a salad? Nobody minds that. And guess what? Like everyone's an adult. They can say no. They can be like, actually, I was really thinking of bringing some, you know, margaritas. Then you can say great, or, oh, we already have 12 people who already are on top of that. So you know, I think it's okay to like assume the best of everyone coming and just make sure that all your bases are covered.
Now, every once in a while, Allie, I've run across the potluck curmudgeon who says, hey, if you're going to invite people over, you provide the food, don't share the work. Obviously, you don't agree with that. You've devoted much of your life to encouraging people to do these kind of things. What's the fun? What's the social advantage of, hey, we're all chipping in to do the food here?
I just think that people enjoy being a part of something. And also, everybody likes to know they're going to have at least one thing that they enjoy at a party, right? And I also think it's not a requirement that somebody cooks. It's not a requirement that somebody spends a lot of money. Like, it's okay to show up to a potluck with a bottle of wine. It's okay to go to your local Trader Joe's and buy two-buck chuck and bring it to the potluck and say, this is all I could afford. This is all I had time for. Whatever. It's the idea of contributing something, of being part of a larger whole. So I think there's this idea of potlucks as like taking up everybody's time or being really expensive for everybody. Like, you're being invited, why should I have to bring something? And I think of it more as just like collective entertainment, something for people to talk about, something for people to be proud of. You know, it doesn't have to be that complicated. Now, if you are like me and you enjoy cooking and bringing things, then yeah, by all means, cook, spend time on it, bring something. But I don't think a potluck inherently means that you have to spend a lot of time on it.
Now, if I'm, you know, the invitee, I'm going to the party, the potluck, the picnic, whatever, and I'm trying to plan, how much do I need to think about, you know, what resources are available there? Like, I probably won't bring the big vat of soup to the picnic. Do I need to know if there's oven space available for the indoor potluck? What kind of logistical checking should we do in advance?
Well, I think the first thing is, if you can bring something that needs no logistics, I recommend that, right? Like, start out with being like, if someone asks me to bring a protein, like, bring something like, you know, I have in my book, bring it a mustard salmon, right? Which can be served at room temperature. Like, if you can in any way avoid needing an oven, needing to use someone's cutting board, try to do that. If you can't, again, just ask, you know, but also keep in mind that if someone is hosting, they are going to be busy. So just try to make sure that you're bringing something that doesn't require a lot of them.
Talking to Allie Rosen, author of cookbooks, including Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. We are talking about bringing a dish to pass on this edition of Food Friday. Love to hear yours. What do you like to bring when somebody says, hey, bring something to the thing? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or when you plan some kind of potluck, how do you divvy up the work? Has it ever gone horribly, horribly wrong? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Allie, I overheard in the studio our technical director talking to you. You are a big fan, and this is just about a good season for this in Wisconsin, weather permitting, for corn and grilled corn. Can you talk about great use to use corn in our dishes to pass?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the best ingredients in the summer, I mean, and the reason why people love doing things in the summer is that the ingredients are so excellent, you don't have to do a lot to them, right? Like, I think in the winter, it's like you're not getting a lot of fresh stuff. So, okay, that's the time to, you know, braise something for 8 hours. But corn in the summer, like, you could literally just shuck the corn and hand it to people and they probably would be thrilled. But I also think that corn is something that's super versatile because it doesn't get wet or messy, right? Like, it's not like a tomato, which is delicious, but can create a mess. It's something that you can serve in a million different forms. It adds a lot of heft to anything that you're making, you know? So if you have a salad and you want it to be more like a side, throw a little bit of corn on it. You know, if you have something that you need to like have a little bit more flavor, but not be overpowered, throw some corn on it. And it's also just great on a grill, like throw corn on a grill and hand it out to people. So to me, there's like very few items that are as easy and beloved as corn.
Let's look at a couple standbys. Things that we might think, you know, oh yeah, that's going to show up at the potluck or the picnic or the cookout. Potato salad. I like potato salad. Sometimes it has a reputation of being boring. I've eaten and I've made ones that are pretty boring. Do you have some advice on how to make an interesting potato salad?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the first thing is to make sure you have some acid in there, right? Like, yes, we like the mayo, it gives it that consistency, but you need something that makes it pop. So for a lot of people, that's just as simple as putting some lemon on it. But also think outside the box. Like, I like to put soy sauce or rice vinegar or even like a little touch of fish sauce, which a lot of people don't think of. And that gives like a great extra layer of umami onto it. But you want to sort of put those additional flavors into it. It doesn't have to be super strong. And it, again, like with the fish sauce, it doesn't even have to be something that a person could actually pick out in a crowd. It just gives it a little bit more depth. So some vinegar, some lemon, and then something to give it a little bit more depth. I think even if it's just like a very simple potato salad with like potatoes and maybe some extra veggies thrown in there and some mayo, you know, just put a little bit of things in there. The other thing is also just enough salt. Like, I think we all get afraid of salt. And it's amazing how much, like when people go to restaurants, like, wow, this food is so amazing. Like 90% of the time it's that they added butter and salt to it, right? So with a potato salad, you're putting mayo in there. You've got the fat piece, right? You've got that unctuousness. So make sure you're salting it properly, because that can be the key.
Now, here's another one, and I kind of reversed here. Coleslaw. I've made a lot of coleslaw in my life. I've tried, you know, blue cheese and funky vegetables and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I always go back to cabbage, carrots, salt, pepper, sugar, mayonnaise. That's my favorite coleslaw. I don't know. Is it sometimes not worth tampering with the classics?
Completely. And I think that's one of the best things about summer, is that everything is fresh, everything is bright. When you have a potluck, especially if it's outside, like, you kind of don't want things to be weighed down. So if you're buying good ingredients, then those should speak for themselves. You know, again, like, I think with a coleslaw, it's like, just put half a lemon on it and you'll see the whole thing brighten up if you think like, this is feeling a little boring. But yeah, I think there's a reason why classics are classics. You know, you don't have to always reinvent the wheel. You don't always have to come to the potluck and be like, you'll never guess my secret ingredient. Like, most people just want it to taste good. You know, it doesn't need to be like a special secret ingredient.
I want to talk some more about logistics here. Like, I've had situations, especially in my family, where everybody thinks, okay, I have to bring enough of my thing to completely feed everybody. Then everybody does that. And you end up with like way, way too much food. And sometimes leftovers are fine. If it's an outdoor thing, well, it might be too gross by the end of it. I don't know. How do we make sure we end up with the right quantities of food?
Oh my God. Yeah. We've all ended up with those like sort of sad, like wilted vegetables because they sat in the sun for too long. Yeah. We all know that movie. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think part of it is saying like, some people bring food and some people bring other things. Like, I think that it's very useful to assign people dry goods at a potluck, because there are always going to be the people who don't want to cook. So if you say to someone like, hey, can you bring paper plates and napkins? And somebody else is bringing drinks, then you end up with not as many dishes. Like, I think it's better to have a few really great dishes than to kind of force everyone into bringing food, you know, because not everyone has that skill set and not everyone wants to or has the time. And so you end up with like some really delicious homemade things, and then you end up with like the weird grocery store thing that was like the leftover thing that nobody else bought that just sits there the whole time and is like a waste of money and food. So I think it's okay to like not make everyone bring something, and then you usually end up with the right amount of food.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to cookbook author and food show host Allie Rosen. Her books include Bring It. That's a book about casual entertaining. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your go-to thing to bring to a gathering where you're expected to bring food? If you like to plan these things out, invite people, parcel out who does what, love to know your strategies. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our talk with Allie Rosen, host of the food show Potluck and author of the cookbook Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining. She's with us on Food Friday talking about bringing a dish to pass and cooking when you're sharing with friends, family, maybe coworkers. Join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like to bring when you need a dish to pass? What are you always happy when Aunt whoever brings it to the family gathering? Or do you have to pretend to like it? I don't know. Join in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's bring on a caller now. Karen is with us in Monona. Karen, hi.
Hi. When I make potato salad, sometimes I use blue cheese dressing, When I do that, the potato salad disappears almost immediately. It's just one of those things that I don't even always think of myself.
Karen, thanks a lot for that. I did something just like that. I made a pasta salad. A few bands were getting together to play for each other and have brats. I brought a pasta salad, threw in some blue cheese dressing, and yeah, it disappeared. Allie, blue cheese can do a lot.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of blue cheese, and blue cheese dressing is kind of like the easiest conduit to getting to blue cheese. It's like that unctuousness that you can add to something. Like, potatoes are delicious, but if you add something really like briny and unctuous to it, and then also the creaminess of it, like, mm-hmm. I mean, what's not to like?
Karen, thanks a lot for that suggestion at 800-642-1234. Allie, let's talk about, you know, a finger food type of setup. We want to bring hors d'oeuvres or appetizers or that sort of thing. What kind of things do you like to make in that category?
Yeah, and I think sometimes the best kind of parties are the ones where you don't need a fork, you know, where you can like walk around with a drink in one hand and a plate in the other and not have to worry about like, how am I going to cut this thing or move it? So, I mean, first of all, I think like little sandwiches, like little tea sandwiches are always great, you know, and tartines. Like, I am just a big fan of like putting things between or on a piece of bread and letting people pick it up and eat it, because you can really go endless with the flavors of that. I also think it's kind of nice, like the classics, like a deviled egg or like, you know, putting like endive leaves are also a great conduit. I mean, one of my favorite things, speaking of blue cheese, now that you've got me thinking about blue cheese things, is to like take an endive leaf, put some blue cheese and pears in it, and that's it. And that's just like a great, refreshing, delicious little handheld thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if you can get away with it, finding like the easiest way for people to eat is always great.
All right, we've got a couple Central Time team votes for deviled eggs. Now, I gotta say, Allie, I love deviled eggs. In my head, they're complicated to make, and I know they're not really. Talk us through what goes into making deviled eggs.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, you can now buy, like, at, you know, Costco, they have those, like, pre-made, already shelled boiled eggs. So, first of all, if you have no time but you love deviled eggs, like, there is no shame in buying them sort of halfway done, right? Start with that. But second of all, if you're going to make them from scratch, it's really easy. You just hard boil an egg. I think, you know, 8 or 9 minutes is pretty good, because you do want the center to be hard boiled, but not so over boiled that it gets kind of chalky. Like, you want it to still have a little bit of bright yellow in it. And then you just add some mayo. My secret ingredient, which I mean, I don't think is so secret, a lot of people do it, but is pickle relish.
Oh yeah.
Because I think it kind of gives you that like tang. It gives you a little bit of crunch. And again, like, you want something that'll add a little bit of bite to it, but that doesn't take a lot of your time. Like, you're not there chopping up pickles, you know? So the pickle relish is great for that. And then just a little salt, and that's kind of it. You know, people love having deviled eggs with all different things on it. So again, like, we're on a blue cheese kick. Like, put some blue cheese in there, you know, put shrimp in there. I love shrimp in my deviled eggs. Mm-hmm. Do it with beets and make it pink. I mean, they're so fun to do. And so I think a lot of people really get hung up on the hard-boiled egg piece of it. And that's something you can do in advance. You can buy them pre-boiled. And then from there, it only takes a few minutes. So, you know, some mayo and some egg yolk, and you're kind of golden.
Food Friday, talking to Allie Rosen, author of the cookbook Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining, getting great advice on dishes to bring to potlucks, picnics, cookouts, you name it. Let's go back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Jim is with us in Marinette. Jim, hi.
Hey, how you going, guys?
Good. What'd you want to tell us about?
My sister-in-law, at every family gathering, family get-together, she makes these things that are called taco roll-ups. She uses tortilla shells. They're like the little pinwheels, but you got like sour cream and taco seasoning. You put, you know, like lettuce and tomato and anything like you can find in a taco, but always the first thing to go at a family gathering.
And just use the toothpick trick, you know, you kind of dice them and then toothpick them together.
And I guess depending how ambitious she feels on putting them together.
Yeah. Now, Jim, is this something you only ever eat at those family gatherings that your sister-in-law brings them to, or have you tried this at home yourself?
I've tried it my home myself, but I've never made it as good as she has.
That's
and they're usually the first thing to go to.
Jim, thanks a lot. That is, I think it's kind of a classic, Allie, that roll up, whether you got the toothpick in there or not. Any twists you want to throw it at Jim and the rest of us?
Well, first of all, I have to say, I'm so glad that Jim was telling us something positive that his sister-in-law did.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that could have gone in either direction,
totally.
You know, well, my sister-in-law. but no, I think that's also, you know, we've all had that. But I think that what's great about that is, again, you know, the taco roll-ups are sort of flavor conduits, which I think when we think of toast, when we think of deviled eggs, when we think of, you know, tortilla roll-up kind of things, like, you can make the same thing, but with a lot of different flavors. So you can do some with taco seasoning. You can do some with guacamole. You can do some with feta and tomatoes and, you know, olives and make it kind of a Greek tortilla roll up. You know, it's giving you that base layer to add flavor into, which I think always makes a potluck feel a little bit more exciting because you're having different options for people without replicating the work on multiple dishes.
Jim, thanks a lot for sharing that favorite with us. Now, Allie, I want to go back to something you mentioned a few moments ago, the idea of, you know, putting out little sandwiches for our cookouts. I worry about that because I worry, you know, oh, depending on the ingredients, the bread's going to get soggy as it sits there and then it's going to get gross. And then nobody's going to want to eat it after a while. How do we avoid the issue of sogginess?
Well, I think you have to think, first of all, about what your potluck is in terms of weather, indoor, outdoor, how long it's going to go on. And you have to decide what you're making accordingly. You know, like a 2-hour lunchtime potluck inside in, you know, someone's air conditioned living room is a very different beast than an outdoor gathering. And I think sometimes people get so stuck on like, oh, I always bring the tortilla roll-ups, right? That they don't think about, well, maybe the tortilla roll-ups wouldn't work at this event. Now, tortilla roll-ups, one of the things that is great about them is that those tortillas really do sit well, but they get soggy eventually too. If you are doing something with bread, I actually think a little tartine, which sounds fancy, but is really just a sandwich without a top, is great for that because those hold a lot better because you can get a sturdier bread. Like if you have a little sandwich, you have to get bread that isn't quite as rustic and, you know, solid, because then it'll be sort of harder to bite into. But if you're doing something without a top, you can do like a really, you know, rich sourdough, and that'll hold up a lot better. So yeah, like tea sandwiches using like Wonder Bread or a really like light, fluffy white bread are not going to hold up as well if they're sitting out in the heat, you know. But if you're sitting outside and it's not a hot day and you know it's going to be in the shade, then great, it'll hold up longer. But yeah, I mean, you have to acknowledge the context that you're in and not get so zoned in on this is the thing I was determined to make, because sometimes it doesn't work.
Now I got to ask the delicate emotional question, Allie. Now, this has probably never happened to you because you're a pro, but it's happened to all of us sometimes where you bring the thing and you watch and everybody gets their food and your thing, 90% of it is still there at the end of the night. How can we manage the emotional damage that causes us?
I would say the main thing to do is to always make stuff that you like, and then you will hope that no one eats it so you can take it home. You know, if it's something that you love, who cares? I mean, I think there's, you know, people have this like sense of pride around what they make and, oh my God, I wish everyone would eat it. But I think of it the other way. It's like, I do love it when people are happy with what I make, but I'm also kind of like, well, if they didn't want it, then can I have it back and enjoy taking it home? You know, which by the way, I think also is totally fine. Like, I think if there's a big potluck and you bring something and nobody eats it, you are totally allowed to bring it home. I mean, you know, offer to the host, say, hey, can I leave you some? But I don't think you have to pretend like they're going to have food left over too. So, you know, it's okay to make something and take it home, I think.
Awesome. Allie, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again today.
Thank you so much for having me, and enjoy your summer potlucks.
That's Allie Rosen. Allie hosts a New York cooking show called Potluck, and she's the author of the cookbook Bring It, Tried and True Recipes for Potlucks and Casual Entertaining, along with a couple other food-related books. Got a novel coming out, I believe, about a food writer. That should be interesting. She was with us today to share recipes and tips for your next summer potluck when you need to bring that dish to pass. Still time for you to share your favorites recipe if you want to. Head over to the Ideas Network Facebook page. You can also let us know maybe about something you brought to pass that didn't work out so well. All that at the Ideas Network Facebook page. coming up Monday on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Get the latest on broadband access in Wisconsin and lack of same in some parts of the state, plus some efforts to get more people connected to high-speed internet. That's coming up Monday morning at 7:30 here on the Ideas Network. Regular listeners know I'm a big fan of the brown bears at Katmai National Park in Alaska and the live camera feeds they have there. A few weeks ago, I mentioned that the bear cams were going live at Brooks Falls and the surrounding area. Promised you an update. Here it is. It was a slow start with a late salmon run, but the salmon are back and the bears are coming out in big numbers. It's a great time to watch them. Here's a few notes if you want to watch with kids. One, you will see bears eating the salmon, which looks exactly like it sounds like it's going to look. Two, sometimes the bears bicker and even fight, which could be scary for the younger ones. Three, the bears don't care about cameras or privacy. So one time this season, there were bears in the process of making more bears, if you take my meaning. So be ready to answer some questions from the kids. I switched to a different camera that time. I figure give them a little bit of privacy. If you want to watch bears in Alaska fatten up for the winter, search for Brook Falls Bear Camera. That'll take you there. Bear news you can use. This is Central Time.